Chapter 66. Disappears inside his tent. An interval follows, during which the sun dips. Enter Colonel Fabrier, aide-de-camp of Marmont, just arrived from Spain. An officer in waiting goes into Napoleon's tent to announce Fabrier, the colonel meanwhile talking to those outside. An aide, important tidings thence, I make no doubt. Fabrier, Marmont repulsed on Salamanca field, and well nigh slain, is the best tale I bring. A silence. A coughing heard in Napoleon's tent. Whose roomy throat distracts the quiet so? Aide, the Emperor's. He is thus the livelong day. Colonel Fabrier is shown into the tent. An interval. Then the husky accents of Napoleon within, growing louder and louder. Voice of Napoleon, if Marmont so I gather from these lines had let the English and the Spanish be, they would have bent from Salamanca back, offering no battle, to our profiting. We should have been delivered this disaster, whose bruit will harm us more than aught besides that has befallen in Spain. Voice of Fabrier, I fear so, sire. Voice of Napoleon, he forced a conflict. To cull laurel crowns before King Joseph should arrive to share them. Voice of Fabrier, the army's ardor for your majesty, its courage, its devotion to your cause, cover a myriad of the marshal's sins. Voice of Napoleon, why gave he battle without biddance, pray, from the supreme commander? Here's the crime of insubordination, root of woes. The time well chosen, and the battle won, the English succors there had sidled off, and their annoy in the peninsula embarrassed us no more. Behoves it me, someday, to face this Wellington myself. Marmont too plainly is no match for him. Thus he goes on colon to have preserved command I would with joy have changed this early wound for foulest mortal stroke at fall of day. One billful moment damnified the fruit of 6 weeks' wise strategics, whose result had loomed so certain. Satirically, well, we've but his word, as to their wisdom. To define them thus would not have struck me, but for his good prompting. No matter. On Moscow's banks tomorrow I'll mend his faults upon the aeropale. I'll see how I can treat this Russian horde which English gold has brought together here from the four corners of the universe. Adieu. You'd best go now, and take some rest. Fabrier reappears from the tent and goes. Enter the Bosset. The Bosset, the box, that came as it been taken in? An officer, yes. General, 'tis laid behind a screen in the outer tent. As yet his majesty has not been told of it. The Bosset goes into the tent. After an interval of murmured talk an exclamation bursts from the emperor. In a few minutes he appears at the tent door, a valet following him bearing a picture. The emperor's face shows traces of emotion. Napoleon, bring out a chair for me to poise it on. Re-enter the Bosset from the tent with a chair. They all shall see it. Yes, my soldier sons must gaze upon this son of mine own house and art's presentment. It will cheer their hearts. That's a good light just so. He is assisted by the Bosset, to set up the picture in the chair. It is a portrait of the young king of Rome playing at cup, and ball being represented as the globe. The officers standing near are attracted round, and then the officers and soldiers further back begin running up, till there is a great crowd.
Let them walk past, so that they see him all. The old guard first.
The old guard is summoned, and marches past surveying the picture. Then other regiments.
Soldiers, the Emperor and the King of Rome forever.
When they have marched past and withdrawn, and the Bosset has taken away the picture, Napoleon prepares to re-enter his tent. But his attention is attracted to the Russians. He regards them through his glass. Enter Bessieres and Rapp.
Napoleon, what slow, weird ambulation do I mark, rippling the Russian host? Bessieres, a progress, sire, of all their clergy, vestmented, who bear an image, said to work strange miracles.
Napoleon watches. The Russian ecclesiastics pass through the regiments, which are under arms, bearing the icon and other religious insignia. The Russian soldiers kneel before it.
Napoleon, A. Not content to stand on their own strength, they try to hire the enginery of heaven. I am no theologian, but I laugh that men can be so grossly logicless, when war, defensive or aggressive either, is in its essence pagan, and opposed to the whole gist of Christianity. Bessieres, 'tis to fanaticize their courage, sire. Napoleon, better they'd wake up old Kutuzov. Rap, what think you of tomorrow? Rap, victory. But, sire, a bloody one. Napoleon, so I foresee.
The scene darkens, and the fires of the bivouacs shine up ruddily, those of the French near at hand, those of the Russians in a long line across the mid-distance, and throwing a flapping glare into the heavens. As the night grows stiller, the ballad singing and laughter from the French mixes with a slow singing of psalms from their adversaries. The two multitudes lie down to sleep, and all is quiet, but for the sputtering of the green wood fires, which, now that the human tongues are still, seem to hold a conversation of their own.
Scene B, the same, the prospect lightens with dawn, and the sun rises red.
The spacious field of battle is now distinct, its ruggedness being bisected by the great road from Smolensk to Moscow, which runs centrally from beneath the spectator to the furthest horizon. The field is also crossed by the stream Kalacha, flowing from the right center foreground to the left center background, thus forming an, quote, with the road aforesaid, intersecting it in mid-distance at the village of Borodino. Behind this village the Russians have taken their stand in close masses. So stand also the French, who have in their center the Shevardino Redoubt beyond the Kalacha. Here Napoleon, in his usual blue-gray uniform, white waistcoat, and white leather breeches, chooses his position with Berthier and other officers of his suite.
Dumb show, it is 6 o'clock, and the firing of a single cannon on the French side proclaims that the battle is beginning. There is a roll of drums, and the right center masses, glittering in the level shine, advance under Ney and Davout, and throw themselves on the Russians, here defended by redoubts. The French enter the redoubts, whereupon a slim small man, General Bagration, brings across a division from the Russian right, and expels them resolutely. Semenovskaya is a commanding height opposite the right of the French, and held by the Russians. Cannon and columns, infantry, and cavalry, assault it by tens of thousands, but cannot take it. Aides gallop through the screeching shot, and haze of smoke and dust between Napoleon and his various marshals. The emperor walks about, looks through his glass, goes to a camp stool, on which he sits down, and drinks glasses of spirits and hot water, to relieve his still violent cold, as may be discovered from his red eyes, raw nose, rheumatic manner when he moves, and thick voice in giving orders. Spirit of the pities, so he fulfills the inhuman antikings he thinks imposed upon him. What says he? Spirit of rumor, he says it is the son of Austerlitz. The Russians, so far from being driven out of their redoubts, issue from them towards the French. But they have to retreat, Bagration and his chief of staff being wounded. Napoleon sips his grog hopefully, and orders a still stronger attack on the great redoubt in the center. It is carried out. The redoubt becomes the scene of a huge massacre. In other parts of the field also the action almost ceases to be a battle, and takes the form of wholesale butchery by the thousand, now advantaging one side, now the other. Spirit of the years, thus do the mindless minions of the spell and mechanized enchantment sway and show a will, that wills above the will of each, yet but the will of all conjunctively. A fabric of excitement, web of rage, that permeates as one stuff the weltering whole. Spirit of the pities, the ugly horror grossly renant here wakes even the drowsed half-drunken dictator to all its vain uncouthness. Spirit of rumor, Murat cries that on this much anticipated day Napoleon's genius flags inoperative. The firing from the top of the redoubt has ceased. The French have got inside. The Russians retreat upon their rear, and fortify themselves on the heights there. Poniatowski furiously attacks them. but the French are worn out and fall back to their station before the battle. So the combat dies resultlessly away. The sun sets, and the opposed and exhausted hosts sink to lethargic repose. Napoleon enters his tent in the midst of his lieutenants, and night descends. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.